So for today's guest, guys, I have a very, very special person, Catherine Grandoff. She is a community organizer. She started Colorado Springs Feminist. She's also a professor at UCCS of Creative Writing and Rhetoric and English for International Students. Hi, Catherine. Welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Nancy. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for accepting my invitation. So this series, Women Who Inspire, I find you super inspirational. I think you're amazing. What you're doing in the community, it's beautiful. So how did you get started in activism? How did you get started in wanting to be a part of the community in this large of a scale?
Oh, gosh. Well, when I graduated from South Dakota State, I moved from South Dakota to Colorado.
Yes.
And I was so bummed out because there wasn't a lot of progressive activism at that time in Colorado Springs.
Mm.
So I moped for like 2 years. And then I was like, oh, I guess I could start something.
There we go.
So I had some experience when I was 18 and I was just starting as a traditional undergraduate student. I was in South Dakota at the time, and it was 2006. And the legislature had just passed a bill that said essentially like no abortions ever for anybody.
Oh.
Yeah, it was
wow.
Like the most extreme of its like.
And this was in 2006?
That was in 2006. And so I was like, whoa, like this affects people like me. But more importantly, I recognized like people like me, really, like we would be fine. It was going to mostly impact in South Dakota, the biggest race relations are with our Native population. And so
yes.
I knew like my Native friends were going to be screwed by this legislation, in particular, my Native friends, my friends without means, which I thought was such shit. And so I was 18. I didn't really have an idea about like what exactly I could do. But then I got picked up by the Feminist Majority Foundation.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, you have energy. We have a place for you.
I love it.
And so, yeah, you have energy, you have passion, you're pissed off, you belong with us. So they hired me, and my job was just to register young people to vote.
Okay.
Like, that was the whole strategy. And I was like, this is our strategy? And they're like, just trust us. And so I worked my butt off. I was taking 18 credits. I was working 50, 60 hours a week. It was bonkers.
And this is at 18?
I was 18.
Wow.
Yeah. And getting death threats, like, and of course.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was intense. I don't think I registered how intense it was, like, until much later when I would, like, people would be like, oh, where are you from? And, you know, asking questions like you asked. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of bonkers.
Well, you know, and it is scary because I think a lot of times when we live within a privilege, right, we don't see all of these things that, you know, all the action that it takes behind closed doors. And it is something as simple as registering young people to vote and creating that, planting that seed
that
it is important that you do make a difference. Because I think a lot of times those in power want to make us feel like we don't make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you're just an 18-year-old girl, like, how dare you think that you can, you know, make a dent in anything. But look at you now.
Yeah.
Grown woman, like, still doing the thing.
Still
like,
doing the
so
thing.
So the seed was planted.
Yeah.
You know, the tree is growing. So how have some of those branches grown? Like, how are you involved? Now, obviously, you're still leading movements and everything. But what are you currently doing? What is...
Yeah,
happening?
I mean, the foundation there was really important because from there, I got super involved, but then I stayed involved, you know, and I started community organizing as soon as those few months of campaigning were over, and I just I didn't really stop, and so I, you know, would, and so I got all this great experience of working with different groups and like having to say like, okay, well, what are your goals? And like, here are our goals and how can we work together on that? And, you know, everything from putting on like shows of the vagina monologues to getting backpacks for like the modern language department. I was a Spanish major too when I was in college, and they would go on these trips to, you know, various places like Guatemala and like, okay, you're going, what can we send with you that would be helpful for like the women and the kids? So I was like, so these like gave me like, okay, well, this worked, that didn't work. And so now, today, like, well, I am you know, I advise the Student Alliance for Gender Equity at UCCS. That's one of the things I do there. And when they're like, oh, man, what could we even do? I think back to like, oh, well, here's some of the things that we did. We, you know, did the T-shirt project where women could write their stories about, you know, sexual assault and abuse, and we would hang them up in the student union for a whole week. And it made such an impression because, of course, like, you can imagine, like, it was like this big, like, vaulted ceiling, and it was just like loaded with T-shirts.
Yeah.
So it was a really powerful visual. And so I have like experiences I can like pull on from my formative days, I guess, as an activist that help in positions like the advising, but also with Colorado Springs Feminists, with community organizing and, you know, that group. What can we do? What's sustainable? What's not? What what things do we have to take into consideration that maybe might not be obvious but are important, you know, especially, like, it's always I think it's interesting in Colorado Springs because we have, like, at least the folks that I've had the opportunity to work with, we have, like, a really strong, like, contingency of Black feminists in Colorado Springs, which I think is really rad.
I love it.
Also, I feel like our Latina population gets really underrepresented in this city.
Does.
And it's our Black population is 4%, right?
Something like that, 4 to 6%. 4 to 6%.
Our Latina population, well, Latine population is, you know, closer to the 15%, 15 to 20% mark. So that always has bothered me. And so I'm always looking for ways like, okay, well, if we're going to do a book club, can we, you know, pull in these voices from the margins that are not, that maybe should be featured that are not. So I think that's. Yeah.
Those things are important. And as a Latin person living in Colorado Springs, I can attest to, like, I mean, I still remember the first time I saw, like, the Mexican grocery store, and I was like, we exist? We're here? Oh, my goodness. Like, how is this possible? And now as I get more involved and, you know, now as I'm becoming more part of the community and getting more involved, I definitely see that there is a need for representation where there isn't, you know, and oftentimes people think that you're just trying to find something to be angry about, right? Because my life is perfect. Because if you look at me, like, how could I have anything to complain about? But it's not about me, right? And it's not about you. It's about the women that will come, you know, after us, the young girls that are like, we're setting the way. We're paving the way. And I totally believe that. And, you know, you're paving the way. You're inspiring people like me. You're inspiring people that are involved with the march. I
hope
you,
so. That's always my goal.
No, I don't think you understand. Like, even just going through the Facebook feed of Colorado Springs Feminists, like, you see just the variety of different women, right, that are here in the Pikes Peak region and what they're doing. And it's beautiful because it's a whole community that you created, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that, like, Facebook has been it's such a tricky friend. Like, you know, this was something that from my previous experiences with community organizing, it's easy to get too big, right, to, like, focus on this national level. And so when I started Colorado Springs Feminists, I was like, well, I really want to just focus on what is going on here, right, because we have the most power at the local level.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, you can see tangible change and you know, if you see a story from the news about a local person, you're like, oh, hey, like, I actually know them, or like, I know where their business is, or I know,
yes.
You know, I think it's so, like, vital to focus on that local level rather than to get caught up. Like, it's so easy because, you know, we have these national, like, political celebrities, and it's easy to get caught up on that. But yeah, I think that it's just more enriching, I think, to do it at that local level. And yeah,
absolutely. No, I agree. And I mean, if you can't change your you know, parameters, like what you live in, right, how can you really change the world?
Exactly.
Like, and I think that's what a lot of, and, you know, not bashing any groups or anything like that, but there is a lot of groups out there. You know, I lived in Texas for a long time, and they just follow national movements, and
because they're more exciting, right?
Yeah, like, but you get lost in translation, though.
Totally.
You know, because it's almost like clickbait.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm posting this because it's on everywhere, so I know you're going to click on it. Versus like, hey, this article about this woman or this business that I can actually go and support. Mm-hmm. I can actually give my business to. It creates such a difference between local and national, and not to bash national movements. I think that they're important. Mm-hmm. And they create and they give light to things that we might be trying to do on a local level, and it might help. But a lot of times I think that national movements get lost in the clicks, and they get lost mm-hmm. in the, you know, likes and the, you know, how many video views right. and all of that. So any obstacles throughout this time, I'm sure there's been many, but okay. any obstacles that you can think of that is like, man, I don't even know how I overcame that, but if it wouldn't have been for that, I wouldn't be here right now. Is there anything that you can think of? Is there anything that just, like, your mind's like, say this?
Well, when I was in grad school, I served on the student senate at my university. Okay. And so, oh, man, and there was... Well, there was this whole contingency. It was like this whole fraternity that I always felt like I was at odds with, and they were super represented in the body. And every time I would propose anything, they would shoot it down, and you know, they would just be like, "Oh, don't listen to Catherine. She's just like the, you know, token feminist," and like blah blah blah. And so, so that was my first like hands-on experience with like institutional resistance, right? Mm. Like it was like fighting an uphill battle before I would even open my mouth. Like people had decided not to listen. And so that was really formative though, because I was also working on my graduate degree in rhetoric.
Okay.
And so I became really attuned to, okay, I have this audience who is hostile towards me. How am I going to get them to listen that we need better rape prevention on this campus because it is rampant? How am I going to get them to listen that we need to fund the LGBT center, not just talk about how, oh, we're going to be gay friendly? Like, how can we actually, how can I get them to hear these things that I think are really important, even though they might, they don't like the source? And so I think like my education helped a lot. Like I was reading, as you do in grad school, all the time. And so, so I was learning about, you know, audiences and chirotic opportunity and how you can take advantage of the moment, and speak in a way that people will listen. Okay. Right. Rather than just like, I might speak what's true to me and I might use the words that I love, but that's not necessarily going to work for somebody else.
Right.
And there was this one guy in particular who was just like a shit to me. Like, just, you know, he would, you know, block all my initiatives. And what's worse, he would, like, flirt with me. And
oh,
I know, I was like, I'm not here for this, right? And then, like, maybe a year or two ago, like, out of the blue, I get this like, message online from him just saying, like, hey, I just want to apologize for, like, how terrible I was to you, basically. I want to apologize, and I want to thank you because I married a feminist. She sets me straight a lot. But, like, I identify as a feminist now, too. And I think, like, you set me on that path, and I wasn't, like, as ready for it as I wish I had been, but, and so that like blew me away. Like those things, I think they're connected, but distinct. You know, being able to be able to speak to people whoever that is in a way that they can hear you. I think that starts with listening. Right. And I wasn't real great at that. And so I think because I had a vision for how I wanted my community and my campus to be. And I thought my vision, what was most important. And what I learned is it's not. Right. Like what's most important is the community's vision. So like to start on that level of like, OK, what do you need? How can I help you get there? And so that helped me when I came here. And after 2 years of moping about there not being like a feminist group around that I could easily enter into, I started with just, you know, getting people together in my living room and we would just talk about what. You know, in our perfect world, what would a feminist community look like in Colorado Springs? And it was people that it was like everybody from like a 16-year-old girl and her mom to like these my favorite like two lesbian Jewish ladies that made quite a drive, like, and they were like 80 years old, you know, like, so I mean, we had like every like span, we had like Native voices, and we had Black feminists, and we even had like some Latina show up. It was incredible, like, so we had like this great like spread of people who showed up, which was so inspiring to me, because I think showing up is like the first huge step, right? Like, you can't do anything.
Absolutely.
Like, if nobody shows up, if they just like cut down, like, oh, that's a crazy idea, there can never be X, you know, or that can never be, that's impossible, like, to entertain the impossible for a moment, I think, and that's what we did. And it's been, I can't tell you how shocked I am, like, after like 6 years or so, like, wow, like, look how alive this city is. It's mm-hmm. like how much like progressive activism is going on, and how many different groups there are now, how many like progressive shops there are. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, Ladyfingers Press is getting coverage.
National,
it's
yeah.
so good. And that, none of that was there 6 years ago. So, I mean, I'm not like by any stretch of the imagination taking credit, but I'm glad that like I have been here long enough to like be part of the conversations that were going on and the dreaming and the imagining that were going
on. Yeah, no, but it is important to take some credit, you know, because the reality is that without people willing to put in the work, nothing happens.
That's right.
Because there's a lot of people that have this pie in the sky idea of like, I wish, I hope. But without action, I mean, there's really nothing that's going to come of it, right? And there's a lot of people that will sit at home and complain about even the use of the word feminist, right? Like, I've had people like, you know, because I'm a feminist. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're a man hater. And it's like, oh, Lord, here we go. Like, I'm going to have to explain the basics.
Yeah.
But
that always blows people's mind. My partner, you know, identifies as a feminist. And they always look at him like, and he has to explain, like, no, it's not that complicated, right? Like, I'm, you know, and oh, my gosh, I don't know where I'd be. And the people who can walk the walk, you know, like, I read a lot of articles of, like, everybody else, you know, but in particular about, like, the weight on women of, like, maintaining just, like, household and, like, the family social life mm-hmm. and, like, all of that. I'm, like, so grateful. Like, not even kidding. My partner does literally all of the laundry, literally all of the dishes, literally like practically all of the cleaning. And he's like, well, you make our community a better place.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, thank you. It is a lot of work. Also, thank you for folding my,
that is so
my
sweet.
T-shirts.
But see, some people would look at that and be like, but is he happy? Is he, like, you know what I'm saying? It's
mm-hmm.
just like, we wouldn't need these definitions. We wouldn't
right.
need these titles. We wouldn't need any of these things if it wasn't for the fact that at some point we had to say, like, hey, no, we stand over here mm-hmm. and this is what we stand for. So we have to call ourselves this. And it's hard because it's like, yeah, I'm a woman. Yes, I'm an immigrant. Yes, I'm a feminist. Yes, I'm all these things. But at the end of the day, I'm just Nancy, right? Just like at the end
mm-hmm.
of the day, you're just Catherine. Regardless if you're a mom, organizer, wife, all of these things, like, you're still just you.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it's like, we wouldn't have to create movements
mm-hmm.
if the world was a fair, beautiful place that, you know, rainbows and unicorns and we all could just live happy, right? So it always gets to me when people get angry by women who are doing things, but
mm-hmm.
it's like, do you understand that thanks to these movements, your daughter,
mm-hmm.
your granddaughters will not have to go through what
mm-hmm.
your grandmother or great-grandmother had to go through. And
mm-hmm.
I think it sucks that we have to bring it to a personal level, because it shouldn't take you having a daughter or, you know,
right.
being married,
like,
to a
just
woman.
Just half the world population.
Just, yeah. And I always tell people, like, women's issues are not just women's issues. Like,
mm-hmm.
No,
oh, absolutely. I have a son at home. He's he just turned 1 year old.
Aww.
And I am confronted on a daily basis with how this work will improve his life. And I think that's partially, like, oh my gosh, I thought, like, activism was hard, like, pre-momming. Like,
right.
oh, it's like a whole different ball game, like, with, like, it's like working around and, like, but I feel like it's important to persist, because I don't want people to assume he's a lady killer. What, first of all, what a terrible term, like, a lady killer. But also, like, my partner is, like, the best at this, but he's like, we don't know who he's going to choose to love. We just need to, like, you know, and so not setting up even those, like, language barriers to who he can be, like,
mm-hmm.
before he can even talk, you know? So
yes.
So And you know, the gendering of children is just, it's immense. Like, I notice it, I noticed it before because of my research and because of my activist work, but yeah, to see it like up close and personal, as a mother is, it's intense. I mean, it starts day one. And so I think to, you know, expand the definition of what it means to be a woman so that it could include anyone, to expand the definition of a man so that it can include anyone who wants it. Yeah, let's shoot for that, you know?
Right?
Let's shoot for that. Let's get in somebody's living room and talk about the impossible and, you know, hopefully, you know, if we could get it done in 6 years, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, like,
one can hope.
Yeah.
But you know what? Planting seeds, man.
Planting seeds.
That's what I tell people all the time. Plant seeds. You don't, mm-hmm. like, even just small conversations, even, like, you never know who's listening.
It's so true.
You never know what someone's going to take away from it. And that's the inspirational stuff. That's where you inspire without even knowing you're inspiring. That's where, you know, I always, like, I like telling women or men that are inspiring, like, you're a very inspirational person. And usually it's like beet red, like, oh my God, me? And it's like, why don't we celebrate each other for the amazing things that we're doing? So with this series, this is what I want to do. I want to celebrate what you're doing. But I also want you to recognize, like, I am doing these That's things. Right. Like, because it's like, what LifeCope is about is self-help, right? And like, you are being selfless right now by helping other people, but you have to also recognize and give yourself like kind of like that pat in the back, like, you go, girl, you know, you're doing the thing.
It's healthy. Yeah, no, it's really, I mean, I think I'm grateful for my students with that, because like I get that kind of feedback, you know, every 16 weeks or so, like, oh, Miss G, she like, you know, she made me think about this thing in a way that I never thought of before. Like, that, for example, I one of the units I teach is, it includes Susan B. Anthony and Sojourner Truth back to back.
Okay.
So they first get to talk about Susan B. Anthony, and they kind of know who she is, mm-hmm. you know, and like they feel like generally she's a good person, and I don't want to like destroy their dreams or anything.
Right.
And not that she didn't do incredible things, but also like, you know, on the backs of, you know, our Black sisters and their role in this movement. So. Mm-hmm. That was kind of not great. And by that, I mean, it was terrible, right? Like, the way that, like, that segmented our movement and that, you know, that was a key moment. And so they're like, oh, my God, I never thought about it this way. Right. I never thought about how, like, someone who we exalt in history could actually, you know, maybe be more nuanced at the very least and maybe problematic as well.
And that's the thing, though. But for her time.
Yeah,
she thought she was doing the right thing.
She did.
And this is what I tell people. As a Latin person, this is what I tell people when it comes to Susan B. Anthony. And it's like, she might have not stood for me then, but she created a wave that made it possible for me to have a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And I can't deny that. I can't deny that the movement she started created all these ripple effects that reached other communities, some positive.
That's such a great, like,
some negative,
nuanced and intersectional response, because, yeah, it's hard. And, you know, like, Nico Wilkinson and I talk about this sometimes, because we both present super white, but both of our mothers are Hispanic.
Right.
And so we don't really own that part of our heritage maybe as much, but it's really important, I think, to me, as like in this point in history, for that intersectional message to be consolidated and be like at the forefront of the movement. And not everybody, you know, part of my work with Colorado Springs Feminists, it's, you know, feminist is such a big title. It's such a big,
right.
Like category that you get people from all backgrounds. And so we get, one of the things that we get a lot is, you know, folks who are from, are second waivers, and like the main focus was reproductive rights. And at the time, I get that, like you said, like they were creating a movement at this time, but so they don't understand necessarily like this intersectional business. But I think for where we're going, like, you know, it might not be part of our past, but it needs to be part of our future.
For sure. And I think just helping people understand that and just realizing that, like, look, that's the past. Now we have the present at our hands. And how are we going to make the future better for all?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just certain groups, like it happened in the past. And, you know, it's so hard because people are always going to have their opinion and they're always going to have their biases. But I think the more we talk about it like this openly without, you know, taking anything personal or feeling like, oh, you're after me, you mm-hmm. know, or because I have a different viewpoint from you, we can't be on some level of playing field where we can have commonality and have conversation and move the progress forward. I think that we get stuck in places when we focus on the personal aspect mm-hmm. too much. Like, how do I feel about this? How do I?
Well, that goes back to, like, kind of this lesson that I started learning. I won't say I've learned it, but this lesson I started learning, you know, through my graduate work and through my time in the student body and in the student senate at South Dakota State, like, you have to listen. You have to find out what's important to people and speak to that in a way that they can hear. And I think, like, that's the biggest thing that's holding us back right now, like, at the local level and the national level and the international level. I think at every level, people, we're kind of terrible. I think we've gotten very good at, like, expressing our feelings, which I think is an improvement from, you know, 50 years ago.
Right.
Right. Like, I think people are getting pretty good at, like, expressing their thoughts and their feelings. But I think we're still pretty terrible at closing that door for just a minute, like, just, like, quieting down and closing our mouths, opening our ears, and being not susceptible, but you're just being open, you know, being open to hearing, even if we aren't going to agree. And, you know, that's the hard part. Like, you hear some things that just, like, rub you just the wrong way instantaneously, and you think, like, oh, I shouldn't stand for this at all. You don't have to stand for it. You just have to listen and try to understand. Like, I mean, the hardest thing for me, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I go to All Souls downtown, and I'm an atheist too, but so that's fun. So I go to this church, and the first principle, the reason I think that I went and I stayed, is because it talks about, like, acknowledging the dignity in everybody, right? Acknowledging the dignity. And so that has been the single hardest thing for me in something I continue to work on is, like, even if it's someone who is, you know, maybe a super supporter of President Trump, you know, who I think along a lot of your listeners might not like, some of them maybe they do, but, you know, I struggle with President Trump because I disagree with him on so many levels about right. so many things, but it's important that I listen to, you know, my cousin who I have loved all my life. She had a reason she voted for this dumpster fire. But, you know, she had a reason. And so I think it's important for me, like, just in my own practice, for my own health, for my own self-care, my right. own well-being, that I practice that skill of listening to her, even if I don't agree with her, even if I don't agree with her reasoning, you know, not to listen to her, not to come back and say, well, you're wrong for this and this and this reason, but to be able to say, okay, I hear you. And I think, you know, both of us have the same goal. We want a better world for our kids.
Right.
How can we get there instead of, like, staying so separate?
And I think actively listening
yeah.
On both parts is what we lack, but we also what is most important. Because when you actively listen, that's when we actually get stuff done and we can mm-hmm. find commonality and be like, you know
exactly.
what? Exactly. We have different viewpoints, but at the end of the day, we want a bright future for our children. We mm-hmm. want a bright future for ourselves as women. So how can yeah. we get there together? Instead of, there's so much divisiveness mm-hmm. now.
And it's hard because the divisiveness, like, you feel kind of good, you know, like, in the moment. Like, I think long term it's terrible for us. It's like yeah. junk food. But in the moment, it feels really, like, justified. Like, oh, I'm so much better than this person mm-hmm. because I think this way and they think that way or whatever. And so I struggle with that. But I think, like, you know, I think if I want to be a good example for my son, I think about the kind of person I would like him to be someday. And you know, I think that that's important.
That's good. Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much. So, is there any current projects you're working on? What are you, like, right now, like, pushing forward? Or
oh,
maybe
yeah.
the university, personally? What's going on with you? Just tell us
yeah.
a little bit.
Well, right now, I'm gearing up to teach a new research class that I'm really
Ooh.
Excited about. Yeah, it's about global challenges. So looking
okay.
at different countries, different places around the globe and how they're handling various problems. So that's, like, kind of my professional world. I am probably most relevantly to our conversation, I'm helping organize the Colorado Springs Women's March.
That's right.
Yeah, which is terribly exciting. It's the third one, second one that I've been involved with. And it's so cool to be at the table, to be able to see this broad array of folks who show up, you know, and it's
right.
It's no small thing, as we talked about earlier,
yes.
to show up. And so the planning committee has been working super hard. There's some great upcoming, like, pre-March events. One
right.
of them I'm going to be helping with that,
yes.
is that Nancy's going to be in charge of. It's a writing workshop, so I'm going to be just like her helper is my grand plan.
I'm so excited. Yes.
And that's on January 6th and another one on the 11th.
Yes.
And then the March itself is on January 19th, which is at 2 p.m. at City Hall. So that's like what we're gearing up for.
I'm so excited. Yeah. So I've told the listeners, you know, I'm a part of this and I'm so excited for it. But, you know, again, if it wasn't for inspirational women like you, I wouldn't have a seat at the table. And thank you for that. Like, seriously, the work that you're doing, it's beautiful. It's amazing. And if you guys want to come to the writing workshop, go to Colorado Springs Feminist, or you can go to the Colorado Springs Women's March, and you can find all the information there. It's also on my website, nancyiperez.com. There's a link directly to the Facebook event. You can find all that there. But I hope that you can join me and Catherine on the 6th or the 11th, and you can find all that information there. Catherine, where could they find you online? What can they?
Yeah, Colorado Springs Feminist is on Facebook and Meetup. So check us out on both of those platforms and on Instagram, and Nancy's helping us with this Instagram and Twitter forthcoming.
Yes.
But as of right now, best place to find us is Facebook and Meetup. Join us there. I try to keep up on all of the events and things like that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Catherine. Yes, guys. So go check it out. And I am so excited for this series. I hope that you guys are getting inspired just like I am. I'm like, right now, I just want to like go do things and plan. And I'm, you know, that's what it's all about. So thank you for being here. Yeah. Like, let's kick ass, right? So thank you so much. And guys, come back next week. I will have another episode with another super inspirational woman. Take care. See ya.
Bye.